Okay. It is, in fact, noon on March the 7th. So I will call this meeting of the Communication and Legislative Liaison Committee meeting to order. And we will start with the roll call. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll?
Roll call, Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Tran. Director Yeo.
Here.
Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Sheldon. Director Amezcua. Director Meeks. Director Nguyen. Director Wigand.
Here.
Director Green.
Here.
You do have a quorum of your committee.
Madam Clerk, Steve Sheldon, I am here.
Thank you. Noted.
Great. Thank Are there any much. Item any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Great. That brings us to the consent calendar, which consists of one item, which are the meetings of the minutes of the previous meeting. What is the pleasure of the committee?
I've moved the item.
Can't do anything.
Okay, we have a motion from Director Whitaker, and I will second the motion. And if you can call the roll, please.
Roll call, Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Director Yeo.
I abstain.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Sheldon.
Yes.
Director Wigand.
Yes.
That motion carries with four yes votes and Director Yeo abstaining.
Fantastic. That brings us to items for consideration. Item number two, which is our state legislative update. Take it away. Elisa, did you want to introduce the item?
Don, did you want to take the first bill?
I thought Paul was going first, but I'm happy to go whenever.
Happy to go first, Don, if that's helpful.
Yeah, that would be great. Thanks.
Perfect. Well, good morning, Chair Bilodeau and members of the committee. Paul Gonzalez filling in today for Jason, who's on a flight down to Southern California. Just wanted to provide the committee with a quick brief update from Sacramento. As we have previously reported to you all, the governor's January budget proposal projected a $38 billion budget deficit, which was a stark contrast to the LAO's $58 billion projected budget deficit. The January 2024 tax receipts came in about $15 billion under projections, taking the projected $58 billion budget deficit to about $73 billion. However, the February personal income tax and the corporation tax receipts came in about $1.16 billion above projections last month. There's about $706 million in additional personal income taxes and about $418 million in additional corporation taxes. So even with the small positive sign on the state's revenues, the legislature and the governor are going to have their work cut out for them this year. And you know, honestly, in the out years as well with the state budget. So as always, we'll continue to keep you apprised of the budget negotiations as they continue. Moving on, I wanted to cover one bill for the committee, AB 817 by Assemblymember Pacheco. This bill proposes to provide a narrow exemption under the Brown Act for non-decision-making legislative bodies that are currently governed by the Brown Act. These legislative bodies include advisory bodies and commissions and allow them to participate in two-way virtual teleconferencing without posting the physical location of the members. The bill proposes to remove barriers to entry for appointed and elected office by allowing non-decision-making bodies to participate virtually as long as they don't have the ability to take the final action on legislation, regulations, contracts, or any of those types of entitlements. The bill was introduced last year. It's now a two-year bill. It did pass off the assembly floor on January 25th and is now in the Senate pending referral to policy committee. The bill is being sponsored by the California Association of Public Authorities for In-Home Supportive Services. And it's also supported by the California Association of Recreation and Park Districts, the League of California Cities, Urban Counties of California, Rural County Representatives of California, and the State Association of Counties. And with that, the staff recommends a support position on the bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Any questions? Go ahead, Steve. Yeah.
Would this cover our committee meetings?
Yes, ma'am, it would.
Okay.
And it sounds like it'd cover like ad hoc meetings and things like that, right? Ad hoc bodies. because they're not the final decision maker.
That's okay. Correct.
Great. Steve, did you have a question? Thought I had heard Steve. Okay. Are there any other questions on this bill? Then why don't we move along?
We're happy to do that. I think that turns things over to us. Good afternoon, everyone. One other quick bill, and then I'll turn things over to Don for one last update. You have in your agenda AB 2626 by Assemblymember Dixon. This is a pretty straightforward bill. You all are well aware that last year the Air Resources Board passed regulations requiring that all heavy-duty vehicles be replaced with zero-emission vehicles. Beginning this year, it was an incredibly aggressive regulation, and people have questioned its feasibility, both from a cost, but even a technical perspective. So Assemblymember Dixon, working with the city of Seal Beach, has introduced this bill, which would essentially give an additional 10 years for local governments and others who have to comply with that regulation to do so. I think the thinking being that that would push out the time and potentially reduce cost and give some slight likelihood of being able to feasibly replace a vehicle. At any rate, your staff is recommending a support position, and we're happy to answer questions.
So bomb and apple pie.
Any questions? This is Dennis. I have a question. So since Assemblywoman Dixon is the author, does this bill have a chance at passing? I mean, I don't know what the climate is up there nowadays.
That's an extremely good question, Director Bilodeau. And the honest answer is that this bill is going to have challenges regardless of who the author of the bill is. You know, we have been involved in other efforts around ACF last year related to utility fleets. It's going to be very challenging to get a one decade push out of compliance. But again, you know, I think the good intent behind the bill is essentially to recognize the fact that local governments like yourselves will be challenged to meet that requirement in this year or the next several. So,
okay. So it'll probably spur some discussion.
Correct.
Can I add on to okay. that too? I heard her at ACCOC meeting, and she said that this year she's doing a good job about getting bipartisan support for her bills and additional authors from the other parties. So she's being strategic on these.
Good to hear. Okay.
I guess so, my turn, Mr.
Yes, go ahead. Chair. Go ahead, Don.
Yes. Yes. Sorry about speaking over you. Apologies for that. Part of the regular update on PFAS funding. Much was reported at the last meeting, but just as a reminder, then I'll get into a little bit new developments. So, you know, we, President Green and both former GM and GM Kennedy and Jason Gonzalez and myself met with the state board, Joaquin Esquivel and the top three staff on this matter, I think in January. Thereafter, General Manager Kennedy did a follow-up letter, which they knew was coming based on good constructive conversations with them with some recommendations. Since that time, the new part is there's been interaction between board staff and General Manager Kennedy, and I think maybe some other staff here that I would defer to others to discuss since they have firsthand knowledge. In the meantime, assuming that we need to launch, an advocacy campaign beyond what I've just described, we've been collaborating with your staff to put that together, and we will probably be actually launching the lobbying, in the extremely near future. And happy to answer any questions.
Great. Any questions for Don? Hearing none.
Have staff said anything about movement? Or did some of the staff members kind of came forward?
Yeah, we talked to one person from that meeting, and he gave us an idea. We were asking to allow multiple applications And he was saying you should also ask just to allow for a bigger amount of money. You accomplish the same thing. And then there's less applications and less paperwork. So our recommendation will be to put either one, allow multiple applications or raise the $5 million limit and kind of put it in their hands, send a letter like that, and then get lots of local support from our assembly people and the producers and make a run at it probably in April. Right before they come out, they'll come out with what they call an intended use plan on how they plan to fund projects for the next year. Get it in that process and see what happens with the state board. Yeah.
Some of the staff members seemed very amenable to helping.
Yeah, they could see the predicament we're in and want to try to help. Yeah.
Thank you, John. So the recommendation is to take this to the full board with a support position on the two bills we discussed, and I'll make a motion to that effect.
I'll second the motion.
Great. Can you call the roll, Madam Clerk?
Well, Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
The motion carries 5-0.
Great. That brings us to the federal legislative update. Lisa, if you can introduce our guest, Mr. Saperstein.
Take it away, Mr. Saperstein.
Thank you, Chair Bilodeau and formerly Ms. Duncan. Good afternoon, everybody. Couple of quick updates, some positive, actually most of them positive, depending on your perspective. The appropriations bills are winding their way finally through Congress for fiscal year 24. You've seen the papers, probably the news stories. They passed in the House by a landslide margin of 339 votes. The first six spending bills of the 12 spending bills in total yesterday. And so that package of bills is in the Senate now. We expect the Senate to pass them and send it to the president for enactment before the deadline of Friday, March 8th, tomorrow. In the package are earmarks for EPA. And within that package is an earmark for $1.75 million for groundwater cleanup by Orange County Water District. I will say that is below the $8 million request that Representative Kim made. I will also say, if you're trying to put a silver lining on it, that the funding was the highest earmark that Representative Kim secured in Orange County within the EPA spending bill based on our quick review of earmarks. And generally speaking, most of the earmarks for water, what we call STAG, state and tribal grants assistance earmarks, most of them range between $500,000 to about $2 million, and with some outliers of less than 500 and a handful that are above $2 million. So what that does for the last two cycles, the district has received almost $7 million for the cleanup of PFAS in the basin. Assuming the Senate passes, it'll go to the president, as I said, and be signed into law. And then it'll be up to you folks to contact EPA and get the ball rolling to get the money into your bank account. The other thing I would point out, the appropriations process starts in earnest on March 12th for fiscal year 25, when the president's budget will go to Congress. I will say that earmarks will once again be available. I will have recommendations for Alicia and John and Gina in the coming days with respect to how to proceed on earmark request with the delegation at large. I will also say that any funding decisions that are made on fiscal year 25 that begins on October 1 of this year probably won't happen until a lame duck session in December. And that's where we're on appropriations. To PFAS specifically, a couple of important updates. First of all, working with Alicia, a letter went to the Committee on Environment and Public Works chair and ranking member, urging them to act on PFAS liability for water agencies. As part of that letter, a request was to support what is known as the Senator Lummis Bill S-1430 that would explicitly exempt water and wastewater agencies from liability. That letter was sent in anticipation of a March 20th hearing that we've talked about before on PFAS liability before the full committee. And that hearing will have five witnesses, one from the solid waste community, one witness representing the water and wastewater community, a witness from the environmental working group, most likely named Scott Faber. Some of you may have seen his work in the past. And then a witness from the state attorney general's office in New Mexico, and then a witness from the Congressional Research Service, who's apparently an expert on CERCLA liability issues. He will be there really almost as a referee to call strikes and balls against some of the comments that are made by the other witnesses on liability issues. The witnesses for water and wastewater, as well as solid waste, have not been determined yet. The committee is casting a net with some of the national trade associations to find an agency that deals with both water and wastewater issues to represent the community at large. Going back to the letter, the assumption is that you will be joined with as many people throughout the country urging on the water sector side, as well as the solid waste sector side, urging Congress to provide liability exemptions for the water sector, wastewater sector, and solid waste sector. And the plan of action by the committee staff are to basically show a stack of letters during the hearing that shows that the community at large says we need liability protection. So that is the setup of the hearing. The hearing is theoretically being called to allow the members of the committee to understand what's at stake here with this whole issue of liability under Superfunder CERCLA. The subtext, though, may be more along the lines of the fact that we expect that the MCL for PFAS under the drinking water law, as well as the designation of hazardous substances of PFAS under CERCLA, will be dropped in April. Okay, so in a couple of weeks, they will have the final rules out. So the hearing is going to hopefully set the stage to give some backbone to the committee to take action on the liability issue in the coming months as a result of the designation as a hazardous substance. I would also say, though, that we fully expect that the lawyers for those stakeholder communities at large will be going to the courthouse doors to file suits against both rules. On the MCL, it's pretty straightforward. The science doesn't add up on the four parts per trillion number. On the designation, it's more about a Procedures Act. EPA, and this gets into the weeds, so I'll go through it really, really fast. EPA, when it chose to designate PFAS as hazardous substances under CERCLA, it bypassed the process that is supposed to be used to name something as a hazardous substance, so that the procedures that were used were not followed. And that will be the basis, I think, of litigation against the agency's actions. Under normal circumstances, EPA first finds that a substance or a chemical is a hazardous constituent under the Resource Conservation Control Act. It then lists it as such, and then it does further studies to determine if it's a hazardous waste. And upon that determination, it then has the authority to list it as a hazardous substance under CERCLA. It's a very long process, but it has to be followed. And that's why many folks believe that the agency is at risk of having the rule thrown out because it failed to follow the Administrative Procedures Act. Just have to wait and see. But in both cases, we fully expect that there will be litigation pursued once those rules are issued. And just for a quick recap on one other point, when the drinking water rule is issued, water agencies have 3 years to comply, so it's not an overnight thing. And then as much as the designation is theoretically effective the day it is issued as a final rule, the actual bite of that final rule is 1 year later. So there isn't going to be, at least from a regulatory standpoint, as we understand it, an immediate impact from the designation. So, Mr. Chair, I believe that's where we are right now. I'm happy to answer.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. I wanted to note that I received an email from Congressman Correa's office yesterday that he's opening up his request list for the community, they call it the community project funding requests, which is, I think, an acronym for earmarks.
Correct.
And he's accepting those through March 26th. I note in the past we've gotten funding, Congresswoman Kim has carried for us, obviously, that you mentioned. But I hope we have a concerted effort to work with our producers, like, for instance, for Congressman Correa, for, you know, Santa Ana, Anaheim, and I believe he has part of Fullerton now, that we're going to ask for money for PFAS treatment for O&M or whatever to so we can continue our program. And I don't know if we do the same with Congresswoman Sanchez, Linda Sanchez, or Michelle Steele. I just hope that we have a concerted effort to try to get requests into these lists. I know Congresswoman Porter does not participate, is my understanding, in this exercise. But I hope that we're all coordinating with the producers to get these requests in so that we can potentially generate more federal participation.
Yeah,
that's my comment.
And Director Sheldon, Director Ildar, I agree 100%. That's one of the things I wanted to talk to Alicia and Gina and John about, which is broaden the net, if you will, with submissions.
Yeah, I think we got to turn over every rock and make sure every member is touched by their water constituents to ask for PFAS help.
And Senator Padilla will be opening his portal, if you will, in the next couple of days, if not a week's time or so. Senator Butler already has opened hers.
And I noticed the email, which I forwarded to John Kennedy. It says that letters of support are due by March 29th. So if we need to put a support letter in for a producer, we should certainly kind of get that underway.
We had a federal request for letters to senators and gave the names and addresses for those to be sent in today.
Okay. Just want to make sure all on the same page that we're chasing this federal money as much as possible during this short window.
For sure. We'll follow up. Yeah.
Okay. Any questions for Eric on any of these things he's mentioned? Well, thank you, Mr. Saperstein.
Thank you.
And Mr. Gilbert, you could interrupt and talk over me anytime. I'm married, so I'm used to it. So we'll move on to informational. We'll move on to informational items now.
So, I think I'll stay away from
Oh, wait, Stacy. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Stacy has her hand up. Stacy Taylor.
Thank you. I resemble that remark, Director Villada. Thank you. Not so much a question, but I just want to thank you, Chair Bilodeau, for your support of members' requests as well. We have contacted our staff counterpart, Alicia, on a few projects that we're actually going to be putting in some requests. They're not PFAS related, but they're still just as important, water infrastructure and cyber threat security. So I just want to thank you for that comment. That was very nice. Thank you.
Very welcome. Okay, we'll move on to the thank you very much to our federal and state advocates. And with that, we'll move on to the Water Summit update.
Right. Thank you, Chair Bilodeau. Good morning, everyone. Just bring this up.
It's not sharing.
Never mind. Sorry about that, everyone. Let me share my screen. There we are. Sorry about that, everyone. Just wanted to provide a quick update of the Orange County Water Summit. The ad hoc committee has begun meeting and planning for the 2024 event. They met in late February. This year's summit will be held Friday, September 27th at the Westin South Coast Plaza. We're excited to report that Fritz Coleman is returning as Master of Ceremonies. During the planning meeting, directors discussed some potential sessions, including a senator showdown between Garvey and Schiff, the AI revolution in water management, financing the future of water, conservation as a way of life, as well as the shift to clean energy. These will continue to be discussed later this month when the committee meets again. And the summit is a joint venture between OCWD and MODOC, with each agency switching off who kind of leads the coordination on the back end. So this year will be MODOC's year, but of course OCWD is very heavily involved. And I believe Director Sheldon has his hand up. Do you have a thought to add?
Are you all done?
Oh, yes, that was just a very quick update.
I prefer to wait until any of my other directors have questions. I don't want to jump in front of them.
Go right ahead, Steve. I think you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I am disappointed in the potential topics of the sessions, except for, of course, the show or the debate with the congressional candidates. I think that would be pretty exciting and having them talk about water issues and how they're going to vote in D.C. The other items appear to me not to be related to water supply, which is traditionally, over the 15 years of this summit, always been the focus. It's always been on water supply. And I'm disappointed that the MODOC representatives are deviating from this mantra that we've had for so long and so much a part of the history of the water summit. Just these items just seem random and not really related to the needs of the Orange County Water District. I believe in the needs of the retailers in the metropolitan or the municipal water district of Orange County of MODOC, that are the needs of the MODOC retailers, I'm saying. So we'll see what happens here. I'm not happy with it because I don't think it's really reflective of the great work that we've done in the past. And again, it's almost becoming the Orange. I don't think it's the Orange County Water Summit. I think it's the Orange County Woke Summit, to tell you the truth. But we'll let you know more as it goes forward.
Okay. Yes, sir.
In order to balance some of those topics a little bit, one thing seems missing to me, which would be strategies for increased storage to ensure sustainability. That does address some of the supply issues, though, and especially with these two heavy rain years that we've experienced recently.
We'll make the strong recommendation. If anyone has any other water supply related topics or thoughts of something that hasn't really been covered or would like to see covered again, please let myself know or Gina know. We'd love to take all those.
Okay. Great.
Did you have Schiff and Garvey locked in, or is that just the potential you're searching for them?
You know, this was a Scott Baugh, Dave Min. Or did they send it also?
Yeah, it was. These were just some potential topics discussed, and if we move forward, then
we didn't talk about Senate. I think we talked about just the House seat of Scott. Now it's Scott Baugh and Dave Min, what it appears to be. But I think, unless the did we go over U.S. Senate also, because that would be great as well.
It was brought up briefly during the meeting and in the document Damon sent out. That's the one that was listed.
It was okay. I read his deck. Okay, well then we should get invitations out to Garvey, or invitations should be sent to the two candidates ASAP to get them on their scheduling.
Would it hurt to send it to Min and Ba?
I think that'd be great. I don't know if we can do maybe we could have all four of them up there. All four of them up there. That'd be great.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean,
I'll send this.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea. All four of them.
Oh, yeah. Hey, boy, that's fun. I can't wait for that.
hopefully we'll be successful in getting them to come.
But I can't imagine them coming. However, I think we might have a better chance with Scott and Dave Men than with Garvey and Shift, just because I don't think they'll be in Orange County that much. But I don't know. Let's see.
Yeah, Kathy, I think that that was the conversation. Generally, that's sort of where I was going in my thought. Thank you for
refreshing my recollection. And but you know, we can have four chairs up there, and we'll see who wants to come fill them.
Sure.
Or maybe we should just do this ourselves. I don't know.
What do you mean, do it ourselves?
Well, I'm not. I really think this is a significant. This is a serious and significant deviation from what has been always the mantra of this water summit. And I'm in, you know, I'll just taking into consideration the stubbornness of the other directors and their desire to want to go off on this left field bent. I don't think this is something we really have to seriously consider. I don't know if I want to be a part of it.
Are you talking about the Senate and Congress showdown?
I'm talking about all of the above.
Okay. I agree. That one took off on a different tangent than I was prepared for, but I don't think it would hurt to find out how they stand on water issues.
Agreed. So we just for this committee's purposes, for the Ledge Committee, our summit committee will have more conversations, and hopefully some folks will sober up, and we can have another great water summit.
Okay.
All right. Does that wrap up this item?
Just want to make sure everyone knew how it
I was going to ask a question, but I'm not going to because I'm sober.
Okay. Fantastic.
Come on, Valerie.
We appreciate that. We appreciate that, Aramesqua. Okay. Then why don't we move on to the Children's Water Education Festival update.
Yeah, all right. I was going to try and minimize this, but it's not. That's okay. It doesn't want to.
I'm sorry about that.
And I will note Paul Gonzalez is hanging on the line, which is impressive. He must be very entertained.
So we have Danny Virch here to provide an update on the Water Festival happening later this month.
Thank you.
So as Crystal mentioned, I'll give an update on the Children's Water Education Festival. It's just 3 weeks away. So we're really getting close to the event. It's our 27th year having the event. As a recap, it's going to be held on March 27th and 28th at UC Irvine. And kind of to get a better idea of what goes on in the event, it's a structured field trip. So we invite third, fourth, and fifth graders. We invite all Orange County third, fourth, and fifth grade classes, both public and private, to come. Those classes will travel together to six different presentations throughout the day, led by different groups in the community that are hosting educational activities for the kids. So I will go through the schools, the presenters, the volunteers, and the sponsorship kind of specifics for the event. So starting with the schools, we have a little over 5,500 students registered. And that's 208 classes. I have a breakdown of the different days and how many students we have and classes we have each day. It's worth noting that we have both public and private schools represented, and all of our district service areas are represented by at least a couple of classes. You might notice that the number is a little bit less than the last time we met. We have had some cancellations, but we've been following up with all of these classes to see if there's anything we can do on our end to help accommodate them better either this year or in the future. And then also, I wanted to note that we reached out to Mariners Elementary. Thank you for connecting us to the principal there for next year. They seem really excited, so that's really promising. And then a little bit more about the schools. In the packet, it should have a more specific breakdown of each school from these school districts, but these are all the school districts attending. And then you can see at the end, the private schools kind of broken down by each private school that will be attending as well. So moving on to the presenters that we're expecting, we have 60 presenters confirmed. 48 of those are returning from previous years. 12 of them are brand new. So we're excited to welcome these new presenters. You can see them listed on the right-hand side. So those are some of the groups that we're welcoming this year and that are leading activities. And then we also have OCWD booths, which are different departments that are leading activities for the students. Listed there are all the different departments or kind of subject areas that are going to be leading a booth. So it's a good way for the students to learn about the work that we do here. And then moving to the volunteer numbers, we have about 225 total volunteers expected to come and help us. We have 105 that we've recruited, and we're expecting about 120 that Disney is going to recruit to help as well.
They still questionable, or
if they do their own recruitment system and have their own kind of like website and registration. So this is kind of based on previous years. We haven't gotten the exact number, but they are doing all the same things and expect the same number.
They're committed to do something.
They're committed to do the same as they've done in previous years. So that's about 120, give or take a few. And then moving to sponsors, we have a little over $60,000 in sponsorship raised so far. Listed are the different organizations and groups that have contributed to the event. So we're very appreciative of their contributions.
We don't have our name
up there. We're the presenting.
We will be highlighted.
We will be, highly recognized. And then just talking about some next steps that we'll be doing the next few weeks. We're really working to get the confirmation materials to all of the teachers, presenters, and volunteers, finalizing all of kind of the day of supplies and information, including signage and the map and activity books for the students. We are continuing our planning efforts with the different groups that help us in planning this event, including Disney, UC Irvine, and James Events. And I also wanted to note that we have a meeting, thank you to Director Wagan for organizing with UCI next week to kind of talk about their involvement moving forward with this event, kind of trying to bridge that partnership. And then we will be getting information to all of the directors interested in attending. So that information is coming very soon, and we hope that you all can attend. So that concludes my presentation. If there's any questions.
I have a couple quick questions.
Yeah.
One is the cancellations are a little surprising to me. Are we up against any other major educational activities?
The main reason for the cancellations is transportation. It's what I've heard the feedback so far is that teachers put in a request for a transportation for their busing, but they don't actually hear back until closer to the event if they secured that bus or not, which is hard because we try to give them all the information we can ahead of time, but it's really up in the air. And so that's been the overwhelming factor. They're like, we didn't get it.
This should be a high priority field trip, but
yeah. And we also do offer funding for their transportation. So it's not so much that they can't afford it, it's that they can't acquire it, which is frustrating.
And funding is my other question, really. The sponsor is 62,000 so far. What is the anticipated total final budget?
Is it
265?
Yes.
So
mm-hmm.
The difference would be us.
Correct. The vast majority UCI as a location, and then James Events, which is all of the equipment rentals, the large tents, tables, chairs, things like that.
So we could still use more sponsorship.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
If the city of Fullerton would like to be added to that list, you can accommodate it. Yes,
it may be our conversation with Alberto at UCI can help kind of say, hey, you know, we're running a deficit, maybe you can waive some of the fees that we pay. Because what, parking and things like that, they're charging us more.
Yeah, there's the events, which is like the location, and then there's the parking. They're two separate contracts, actually, which is interesting.
I would hope some of the outside law firms that we contracted with would be generous with us.
Well, let's, when we do have that conversation,
Mayor Mesko has a question.
So related to Santa Ana Unified, there's, I believe, 36 elementary schools. Should be about 33 now. Have they all been responding Do you know? And if you, it, you don't have to answer that today. You can send me the information. And as far as transportation, JFK provides transportation to Santa Ana Unified. And so I can reach out to them to make sure they have transportation. If what you're saying is there's funding available, because that's what they always get at Santa Ana Unified, right? We can't afford it, even though they have over $1 billion budget. They can never afford it. So at least with this current board, I'll just say that. So if you can send me a separate email or to the whole group, it's fine. How many schools from Santa Ana Unified have responded? How many want to attend? What is the issue if they're having transportation? And then I can help with that because I want to make sure that they do get to go.
Absolutely. That would be great. Thank you.
Annie, do you know the schools that have canceled because of transportation? Do you know who they are?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I could get that information.
Are they from Huntington Beach?
I don't recall any from Huntington Beach. I don't recall any from Santa Ana either. We do have a large amount of Santa Ana schools attending. I think there was a couple from Anaheim, but I would have to look at to get the specifics. But
yeah, and we did run into this issue last year as well, that schools were scheduled to attend, and a few weeks prior to the event, they canceled because they weren't able to secure buses. They either didn't have the buses, didn't have the drivers, or the buses had to be back at the school by a certain time to pick up students.
There's actually quite a few private schools, now that I'm thinking about it, that's been an issue too. So that's interesting because, yeah.
I was thinking, you know, maybe we could ask the Boys and Girls Clubs, you know, if they could help with transportation. However, the problem is they would have to be available to get their students there in the morning and then pick up in the afternoon. So that might shorten the day some, but at least it could be possible.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And we've worked to accommodate schedules for a lot of schools too. If they do have that perimeter, we're getting them a shorter schedule so they can still attend but get back in time. So that's worked actually really well in keeping some of the classes.
Okay.
But that's a great idea.
Yeah, another possible area, and Dennis maybe might know from his board times, but OCTA, it could be a liability issue that the schools don't partner with, but what OCTA we contracted out with, you know, their service.
Yeah,
too. I don't know how that all intertwines with the school district, but that might be an angle to look at in the future.
Well, we gave buses, actually. OCTA gave buses to help supplement them for school districts, but I don't know about.
There could be a liability issue where they can't sign off kids off to OCTA.
I have a question, then we'll go to Steve. I looked at the list this morning of the school districts that have RSVP'd, and I noticed that the Orange Unified School District wasn't on the list, and they typically participate. Is there something going on or something I could help with?
Yeah, so the Orange Unified School District is on spring break that week, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, they're out of luck.
Yeah, there's about 4 or 5 school districts on spring break that week, but we have to do it when UCI is on spring break. So we did look into that, but it wasn't when the vast majority was on spring break. So unfortunately, schools.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Director Sheldon.
Yes, I wanted to go with what Eric had said earlier. I was thinking the same thing about OCT. I know they have that access program for seniors. And, you know, based on how busy that is, that would be one avenue. But we should certainly, I agree, we should pursue and see if there's any collaboration we can have with OCTA. Thanks.
Yeah, I was going to note on that point, we've been in coordination with them for them hosting a booth, actually. They're still seeing if they can, but since we already kind of have that communication, that would be great. They're really trying to do a booth, but they weren't sure, but they wanted to talk about the program they have for students, which is that it's free for them to use the buses. So it does line up nicely. That's why we reached out to them too.
I'm sure there's an interface on kids on school time, what transportation models they can use to get to and from contract base. It might just not be legal for them to hop on an OCTA. But maybe the private schools wouldn't have that problem.
That's true.
Yeah. Public schools probably do, but it's worth just
asking. Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see what they say.
You had something to say, Crystal?
Oh,
and you got to cut out.
I'm sorry. I don't remember.
Let's see. Looks like Ms. Taylor has a comment.
Yeah, thanks again, Chair Bilodeau, and good afternoon, everyone. Thanks, Danny, for the great report. You know, Mesa Water, we love the festival. We're ongoing sponsors. And if there's any schools that need transportation in our service area, we're happy to sponsor the buses as we've done in the past. So I haven't seen the list, but if there are schools, please do reach out to our staff and we'll take care of the sponsorship of the transportation.
Thank you so much.
Very generous.
That would be amazing. Thank
you. Okay. I think that is it for the Children's Water Festival update. Let's go to the Public Affairs Outreach Report.
Thank you, Chair Bilodeau. Just a brief overview on some of our outreach activities for the month of February. We did have 10 tours, which resulted in 102 tour guests. You can see a kind of a photo of the right there. We also, in addition, had a few tours scheduled for OCWD staff to tour OC Sand. So that's that bottom photo. And that was really interesting to get to see where the water goes before it comes to the GWRS. There were 8 speaking engagements as part of our Speakers Bureau program. We responded to 3 construction hotline calls regarding the City of Tustin PFAS treatment facility. And we sent out our monthly Hydrospectives newsletter to 4,000 subscribers. We also sent out a quarterly update for the North and South Basin Outreach, and that goes out in multiple languages. Legislative engagement in February. President Green, along with Alicia, attended the Aqua DC conference. I did steal this photo from Aqua because I thought it was really nice. So he's there with Congressman Calvert. Upcoming activities, there are a few legislative meetings scheduled for the month of March. In February, we hosted the webinar Addressing Contaminants of Emerging Concern through Innovation, Research, and Technology, which was led by OC Sand's general manager. There were 130 live attendees, and there are currently 106 views to the YouTube recording, and that number continues to grow. And throughout the year, we will continue to host webinars on a quarterly basis. A few accolades that happened in February. The GWRS received another award, this time from the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. OC Sand handled they are a member agency, so they handled that submission. So we're excited to add to our repertoire. We also received a certificate of appreciation from the City of Westminster for our support of their TET parade. So the photo there is of Director Sheldon receiving that at a city council meeting. In terms of media and stakeholder reach, just over 69 million people reached for news stories. Our social media following continues to grow. In terms of website, 32,000 website page views. And a few of the stories. So we did send out a press release in February regarding our stormwater capture, and that had quite a few hits. KNX and KFI radio, we had ABC, LA Times, Washington Post. I think I wrote down a few others here. LAist, is that how you pronounce it? I'm not exactly sure. So a lot of interest in our stormwater capture programs and just all the water we were able to capture from the rain. And then on the right-hand side are a few of our popular social media posts. So that one showing the Santa Ana River was regarding our press release on LinkedIn. LinkedIn continues to be our strongest social platform. TikTok is slowly growing, so over 2,000 views for a little Groundhog Day post with Ginny Groundwater. I know, not quite viral, but it was good for us. And then our most popular Instagram post ever was a little play on the Super Bowl. So that did really well as well, trying to always kind of keep up with current events. In terms of what's ahead, we do have the Children's Water Education Festival later this month, and then we will be participating in OC Sand's Open House, our Water Summit, our Groundwater Adventure Tour, and then, of course, our monthly Waco meetings and quarterly webinars. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, one question. The tour, OC Sand tour for the employees, did that include the new administrative building?
It did not, no. But we learned a little bit about it. But I think with the open house, that'll give us an opportunity to see it, and we may host like a booth there. It looks so pretty driving by.
They're pretty proud of it, and it's going to take a little bit longer before it's fully open, apparently. But
great. Any other comments or questions? Well, I believe these items will be placed on the consent calendar for the March 20th board meeting. Are there any director's announcements or reports at this time? Hearing none. Any general manager announcements or reports?
There are none.
Oh, that's good news. Well, then this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Thank you very much.